As we think about policies for AI, how do we build them? What are the parameters? Well, maybe somebody who's been thinking about detection of AI has some insights for us. John Gillam, who's the founder of Originality.ai, a service that does detection of AI use, joins me on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Looking to reach an audience of thousands of MSPs and IT service providers? Put your ad right here on The Business of Tech and be on the show that 64% of MSPs report having listened to. A recurring top 50 tech news podcast, there are affordable options for you to reach our audience, and we can support any budget. Podcast listeners are more engaged, have a higher level of brand retention, and are more willing to listen to ads here than any other avenues. Want to know more? There's information at mspradio.com/engage, including a button to book a time to talk. Look forward to that discussion. John, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave. Excited to be here and chat about sort of an interesting aspect of the world of AI.
Yeah, you brought up a really interesting question when we were talking beforehand, and I wanted to bring it to my listeners. What inspired you to focus on the intersection of AI and its potential physical impact on people?
Yeah, so with what Originality.ai does is it is a AI content detector that identifies if content has been human created or AI created. And it's important for a lot of companies to truly understand where their content was AI created, because there's a whole bunch of risks that come with that, or whether it was human created. And what inspired us was we had run our own content marketing company. We then eventually sold that content marketing company, and we had seen this sort of intersection of where are humans in the loop, where are AIs in the loop, and that was what had inspired us to try and build our own detector that was able to understand when humans were creating content or AIs were creating content.
And how do you link this to physical harm? Like, what's the physical harm angle for how an AI can actually hurt people?
There was a situation where AIs had written books, and those books had been published on Amazon. And then we were involved in some research with The Guardian, and they had been recommending that the book that was published on Amazon had been recommending that if foragers, so people that were picking mushrooms, were unsure if a mushroom was safe, they should just taste it a little bit to check. And so sort of that ability of AI to hallucinate and then to not end up with any human in the loop is a really interesting risk trajectory that a lot of companies are exposed to if they aren't having their policy tight around the use of AI.
So what are you recommending then as the approach? Well, let's start with the companies that are thinking about using it. Like, how do they implement correctly to make sure that they're avoiding these kinds of harm for their own customers?
Yeah. So every company is going to have different risk profiles. Some need to be concerned about the impact of Matt producing AI content and then getting slapped by Google. That's one of the risks they need to manage. Others are concerned about reputational harm, such as publishing hallucinated news stories, like what a lot of companies have been caught doing. And there's legal harm, where if they're working for a law firm and they need to make certain their lawyers are not using generative AI to shortcut the work. And so it's a nuanced approach, as I think it's probably your audience is familiar with, that the answer to most things is, well, it depends. What's the right solution for me? Well, it depends. It's pretty commonly the answer and the right answer. And I think it's the same situation here, where companies need to have an understanding on where content is being produced in their organization, and then understand the risk associated with if it's marketing content, if it's legal content, if it's contractual content, wherever writers are typing in words, if there's an incentive for them to use AI and that produces a risk for the company, they need to be understanding it. And then our tool is there to help them help them truly understand how much AI has potentially polluted parts of their work that they wish it wasn't involved in.
Now, talk to me a little bit about detection, because, you know, from everything that I've read, there's been a number of attempts. You know, OpenAI's had an attempt to do this, and oftentimes they find that they're not very good in terms of detecting it. Talk to me a little bit about the approach and how you make sure that you can actually detect AI generated versus human.
Yeah, no, great question. And there's a ton, I mean, as with any new technology, there's a ton of misunderstanding about the capabilities of it. Just like when, you know, ChatGPT first came out, people thought it was sort of a super intelligent device people were chatting with, and that it would be capable of things far beyond what it sort of has turned out to be being capable of. Most detectors are AIs themselves. So the good way to think about it is that it's like the good Terminator sort of movie to and on, where it's an AI that's capable of detecting other AI. And so we train it with a ton of human content, train it with a ton of AI content, and then it learns to tell the difference between the two. In the case of some of the reputation of AI detectors not working, they're classifiers. So they have they don't work the same way that the weatherman doesn't work. There's sort of a probability of it being a certain, it being AI, and there's a probability of it being human. On most open data sets that we can test against, we're 99% accurate on AI content, and then we have about a 2.5% of false positive rate. OpenAI, because they were viewed as the authority, because it was their content that was being checked, they were viewed with a much harsher lens than I think a lot of other companies. And they had built a classifier knowing that was so tuned to not produce false positives that it was pretty useless at detecting AI content, but it was also still not perfect and it still would produce some false positives, just a really low number. And so you're always balancing false positives with accuracy with these classifiers. And they're never perfect. And so that's been where sort of this, I think, misunderstanding around AI detectors don't work. It's like they do, depending on your use case and the accuracy that you require.
Okay. Help me then understand a couple of the use cases. So I quit for a little bit that, like, well, spell check is an AI, some very basic. I would assume spell check doesn't fire off the detector. Let's start with that baseline, right?
Spell check, no.
Okay. Now let's talk about like a tool like Grammarly, right? So there's a tool like Grammarly that then goes through and does grammar correction. Like, how is that interpreted by an AI detector?
Yes. And so we have different models. We have a model that where companies are saying no AI, period. The risk is too high. We have our 3.0 turbo model, and that Grammarly will trigger that model to be detected. Human created AI edited will get detected frequently by our most sensitive model for AI. We have a 2.0 standard model where I think most people will say, well, that's okay. That human created AI, light AI editing with a tool like Grammarly and them putting their author's name to it, it's like that's human created. Most people want that to skate through. And that's where sort of our 2.0 standard model is most effective.
Okay, that helps me understand it a little bit. So help me then, I'm trying to make the line kind of a little bit tangible in my head. So it makes sense for me, like something like a Grammarly. Well, but what if I'm working with, you know, a chatbot and we're kind of collaborating, right? And I'm talking about it and it creates some stuff and I start cutting and pasting words and I I'm building my own paragraphs and then I write a line to transition and I tweak this word. Like now it's a hybrid, right? It's kind of a mix. Yeah. How do you detect that and how does it classify them?
Yeah, so that will end up getting classified as AI. And there's potentially nothing wrong with that. Like, for example, we have writers that are on our AI research team and they create content for our website. We know that they use AI and we just let the world know that here's the author behind it. AI was used in the creation of this document. And they use AI. It's a great use case of AI. And so in that case, it correctly will identify that as AI generated, because anytime the way we think about it is we definitely want to call something AI if an input comes into a black box, that black box is the AI, and the output of that black box is no longer recognizable to that input, then that has been modified by AI enough that there's no other mechanism to identify the original source. Because if that wasn't the case, then a paraphrasing tool would be able to turn any content into unique content. And so that's why we classify what you just described as AI. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means that it should be classified as AI. And then our view is transparently communicating when it's been a hybrid. The same way as if you had a co-author, you would credit your co-author.
So I think that leads me to where my next question is, like, how do you tell people to best use AI detectors to be effective?
Yeah. So most of our use case is within the world of marketing. So where we have people that are have writers on staff that are creating content. They're happy to pay those writers $100, $1,000 or an article, whatever it might be. They're not super happy when they find out that content was copied and pasted out of ChatGPT in 5 seconds. That doesn't feel like a fair value exchange. And so the way we recommend our tech be used is within the copy editor. So whoever's receiving the content from writers, use the tool as a spot check and build up a history with each writer to understand, okay, this person has always had, 0% AI detected. They had one article that was a 50%, sort of a flip of a coin. The classifier was unclear, and then it was back to 0%. So, probably that's a situation where the classifier or detector got it wrong. Let that go. There's other situations where you would see a trend on a writer that used to get 0% is now getting 90%, 100%, 100%. Pretty good sign that writer is now using AI. And if that's not within your policies, then you should not be using that content.
Gotcha. So how are you then advising organizations to put their policies together? What are the questions that you think are most important to answer?
Yeah, I think this comes back to that first question that you asked around understanding within the organization where the risk associated with AI having input into content that you might not want exists. And so if you have a part of your organization where absolutely no content, no AI usage is allowed, some law firms are taking that approach, some medical organizations are taking that approach, where we want no chance that AI is being used. We want whoever's writing this to have 100% responsibility on the words that have been used. And in those situations, then the policy will be different than, say, the marketing team, where there's a little bit of sort of let time build up, let some data build up, where there's a sort of a stronger, more binary approach, potentially within law firms. So I think it comes back to sort of a nuanced approach, but making it clear to the editors who are then in charge of policing whatever policy gets enforced, but creating a policy that accurately reflects the risks at that size of that portion of the organization.
Gotcha. Now that you've spent a lot of time thinking about this, what measures or regulations do you think need to be in place to mitigate those risks and communicate? Like, what's the company? What's regulatory? Give me a little bit sense of where your head is for this.
Yeah, I think regulatory. So, like, if we look at sort of like the legal regulatory framework that's going to come out related to sort of transparent use of AI, I think that's going to really focus on the mediums that will do the most societal harm. And so that is photos and video, where the sort of societal harm that come from a misunderstood video or like a totally fabricated video that people believe to be true can be significant. And so I think that's where the regulatory focus is going to end up being. I think it's going to come down a lot to companies' focus and private enterprises' focus around how they want to police AI usage in their organization. And in the end, I think what's going to happen is the author, the importance of putting your name against document is going to increase within organizations. And that's going to continue to mean something. And it can mean something more forward, where, the documents won't just sort of live and it be unclear on who created it. I think that sort of the control, so document control is going to become more significant to smaller organizations, and that the importance of the author will increase over time.
Now, you spent a lot of time working with organizations to help them implement this. Like, what are the kind of requirements from a data management and preparation perspective before applying these technologies that need to be in place for an organization to be effective?
So the organizations that have been the most effective at implementing this have been really clear up front about what part of the organization they're wanting to apply it to. And so when they say, when they try and sort of apply it across the entire organization and try and feed everything in, it just doesn't work because it's unclear on like, well, we learned something, but who's behind this document? And so what we've seen, and I think this is pretty consistent across most change management practices, but getting very clear on a small part of the organization that is the most at risk, but also then potentially the most well-documented, and being able to apply AI detection within that part of the organization. So if it's a law firm applying it to briefs, that's sort of a controlled, understood, well-documented location that this can slip into, where we can basically, if they can apply an API into their process and not institute a whole new process, that has been the most effective. So copy editors, like publishing houses, where they have a clear milestone of document comes in, editor does a task, that document goes out, applying AI detection via an API at a known existing point within a small part of their organization has been the most effective.
John Gillam is the founder of Originality.ai, known for his insightful exploration about how AI can pose physical and data risks to individuals, with a keen focus on the intersection of technology and human safety. John brings a unique perspective to the discussion on AI. He joins us from up north in Ontario. John, thanks for joining me. If people are interested in learning more, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, you can go to john@originality.ai is my email. I'm happy to talk to anyone there. And then you can find me on LinkedIn or X.
John, thanks for joining me today.
All right, thanks, Dave.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines, posted at businessof.tech. If you like the content, please make sure to hit that like button and follow or subscribe. It's free and easy and the best way to support the show and help us grow. You can also check out our Patreon, where you can join the Business of Tech community at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on the show, visit mspradio.com/engage. Once again, thanks for listening to me, and I will talk to you again on our next episode of The Business of Tech.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.